We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the Mag's £4 pint. Available on all draft beers for all NUFC home and televised games, 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. Over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org, be drinkaware. For details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk. It's your True Faith Newcastle United podcast, and we're going to do a bit of a squad review. We obviously play West Ham on Saturday. That is our first of the last 10 games. The last 10 games, which have taken on sort of a life of their own somewhat, I think. A lot seems to be riding on them, but a lot rides on past the last 10 games as well, and the squad and what's going to happen. So I am Charlotte. I'm joined by Audie, Adam C. Got to be clear on that. And of course, Kyle. Thank you all for joining me so much. We're just going to get into it. There's loads to discuss here. And I think a lot of people are looking at injury crises, at other stuff, and thinking we need a major squad overhaul. And then Eddie Howe comes out and says there will be no major squad overhaul. I guess, Adam C., I'll come to you first. Do you believe him? Because Eddie Howe has a fun relationship with the truth with regards to the squad, and either way, I suppose, does it like terrify you if we didn't?
No, I think there's an element of managing expectations with this, as there has to be with managers getting asked any question about the long-term future of their club. I think I said this, you know, before we jumped on the thing. Even if we just retained the players we've got and got more of them on the pitch, we would improve next season. I don't want to sound like I'm doing an Alan Pardew. They'd be like new signings, but legitimately, some of our new signings would feel like new signings if we could actually play them. Us standing still next year would probably represent like a massive, massive step forward. But obviously, the club has aspirations and we will be looking to improve in the transfer market, which is something we haven't always been able to say with a straight face. But I don't think we're in a position, which, as you know, we all know, it's not just us. So many other clubs are feeling the breathy stink of PSR on the back of the neck whenever they're looking towards the future. It's not just us in that situation. We're not in a position where we can, you know, turf out loads of members of the first team squad and replace them with world beaters and superstars. It's got to be gradual, as it has been in all the windows previously. We've only ever added sort of two or three players of genuine quality every time we've dipped into the market, if that. And I think it'll be more of the same. And also, you got to think about this from the other perspective. Eddie Howe's got to go into training with, you know, 20, 25, 30, however many players have still got functioning legs every single week. And if he goes out in a press conference and says, oh yeah, we need a massive overhaul, loads of these guys absolutely suck, like, they're not going to, like, that's no way to manage football, is it, to manage human beings. So it just is an element of Eddie Howe-ism to all this. Like, we don't know what's actually going to happen until it actually happens. But, you know, playing down a huge overhaul and trying to manage expectations, I think, is a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I think there is an element of that, right? You know, his injury is not that bad, so it's all going to be okay. And then we don't see that player for 7 weeks minimum.
there is an element of that and keeping everybody's morale high and all of that stuff. And he does have people to manage and he does have egos to manage and all of that stuff. And he wants to keep people on side. And he doesn't know what, like, we're going to talk in this podcast, in the second part of this podcast, about personnel in particular and who we might expect to see go, or who we might want to see go, and who we might, you know, where we might think we're going to strengthen if we do strengthen. But I do take your point. He can't come out and be like, nah, they're all garbage and we need wholesale new players. But I think it's true that we do need, like, I feel like it's erred on the side of too cautious with the way that he's talking about it, because we do definitely need some reinforcements. Or what do you make of it all? Do you believe him? Do you like, what is it okay if we don't?
Eddie Howe lies. no, like, well, first of all, to go back to what Adam said, like, that there are, there are some of the players which we obviously don't need to replace. Like, he doesn't want to replace Alexander Isak because he knows how good he can be. He doesn't want to replace Sven Botman. He doesn't want to replace Bruno. He'd prefer to keep Nick Pope and maybe try and get an upgrade. But if he doesn't, he's still got one of England's top three keepers, like, as his goalkeeper. Probably the bit where you're talking about him erring on the side of caution, Charlotte, the difficulty that we've got is that expectations are raised so much by what happened last season. Then in the summer, we had everybody fit who we'd bought, and we went out and tonked Villa 5-1, and we beat PSG 4-1, and we put the reserves out and won 3-0 at Old Trafford. And it was like, oh, hold on. Like, we're really kicking into gear here. And then we bought literally nobody in the January window when it was obvious that we needed people. Now, I don't think it's any secret that Eddie Howe wanted reinforcements in January and was told, no, you can't have any. I don't think anybody's trying to hide from that. I think he was quite clear that he would like to bring people in, but the market and the PSR rules, etc., meant that he couldn't. I think if we're going to continue to go forward as a football club, do we need to upgrade? Yeah, we do. And we'll probably get on, like you said, to individual players who do need to replace, who doesn't. But expectations, if he turns around and says, I want six first-team players in next season, like, if we only get four, the ownership are getting pelters. Well, Eddie Howe wanted six. And this isn't the sort of situation where Rafa can just sort of go, oh, well, I mean, what am I meant to do with these? Like, keep them up. It's got to be a sort of management of expectations, yes. But you're right, he probably has been too cautious, because it plays in this narrative that he's too loyal to players, that he's not cutthroat enough. And he probably did need to say, look, yeah, we will be looking to get one or two reinforcements in, but we'll have to wait and see how the market moves. And I think he's been pretty honest, and I think this is what did for them in this January window, is that they've got quite a few people on large salaries that they can't shift, and that will make a massive difference to what they can do. You know, from what I'm led to believe, they tried to convince Isaac Hayden to tear up his contract so that he wasn't getting paid whatever it is, say £30,000-£40,000 a week by us, so that he could go and play for Luton, and they'd give him a free transfer, but they'd get his wages off the bill. Well, like, Isaac Hayden's not going to want to go and go, oh yeah, I'll just forego however many thousands of pounds a week. So there's that element of it, which, again, I feel like we're going back to spreadsheet management again. But, like, it feels almost like we kind of those expectations and the kind of the way he is dealing with this is to say, right, I could promise you the world here, but you're not going to get it. So instead, I'll promise you something which is a bit cryptic by saying there won't be a complete squad overhaul. Well, no, because if we said there'd be a complete squad overhaul, there'd be 25 new players in, and I don't think we need that, and I don't think anybody really wants that, and we definitely can't afford to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Like, he's not going to go out and say a squad overhaul in its essence is saying we're going to, like, turn over this entire team. However, Kyle, I know you are more of the opinion that actually something does need to give, and we do need significant changes to the squad, right?
I think it's a mixture of both what Adam and Audie have both said, to be honest. And, like, you look at the entire squad, I don't think it's disrespectful to the current playing team that additions are needed, because the squad depth this season has been, like, relentless. We've picked up so many injuries. Like, December was chaotic. Like, I think we're hardly 13 first team players fit. Three goalkeepers on the bench. It was mad. So I think additions are needed. I think every player in the squad knows that. It's just a case of how far do you want to go? Do you want to bring in five or six first team players, as mentioned, or is it just going to be a few first team players and a couple of squad players with a bit of youth on the side so they can develop and then eventually come into the first team, like a Lewis Hall, for example, or a Tino? But yeah, I think I think additions are definitely needed there, Charlotte, 100%. It's just, I think the team needs at least a new lease of life, because there's been a couple of games this season where it's just been like, especially just after January, where it was like, oh, I wish we had a new signing to like really kick one in the season. Because every time we seem to make a bit of progression this season, we seem to turn a corner and hit straight into a brick wall. So it just seems to be the roller coaster that this season's been. And yeah, definitely additions in the summer. But then again, it's also dependent on, are we playing European football next season? Because if we are playing European football, we're going to need a lot more players to deal with the extra fixtures that we're going to have to play.
Yeah, all valid points. I think as well, what I kind of want to explore in the podcast as a whole, and then also this bit of it, is it all okay if not? And then what does okay look like? Because we've had to kind of reassess what Newcastle United and what it all, what it's supposed to be throughout this season. I think we're all in agreement that we were quote unquote ahead of schedule. If you've got your Newcastle United bingo cards, you can cross that one off because clearly that's on there. You know, we were ahead of schedule, we finished fourth, we were in the Champions League, all of this wonderful stuff. And it was the most fun last season. It was absolutely brilliant. But which tied in with what Staveley and the new ownership said, Amanda Staveley. I don't really like just doing last names, sorry. maybe not. it ties in with kind of this project, but a lot of sort of, words were said at the beginning of the new ownership about this being, you know, in 5 years we're going to be doing X. Well, we're coming into year three. Are we already three? We're coming into year three, and actually we seem to be sort of sputtering a little bit, you know, like just chugging into the station rather than zoom it. I'm not a train person, so I don't know how to finish that sentence. But we're just chugging, and there seems to have been a bit of a stop-starty sort of, what's going on? What is Newcastle United supposed to be? Where are we in relation to that? And what is it okay to be as well from a fan perspective, Stephen?
Well, I'm probably going to be in the minority here, but like I fully expected this season to be I didn't expect that we'd be scrambling and we're going to finish 10th, 11th, 12th, but I fully expected that it was going to be that bit harder. I remember, I can't remember which game it was, I think it was maybe after Forest on Boxing Day, saying, I can't see this team getting top six or top seven. And I can remember Alex saying, oh, you know, they're only 4 points off it. And I said at the time, look, you can't get beat 3-1 of Forest at home the way we did and expect that that's going to be okay. Having said all that, I'm not really sure what Newcastle United fans' expectations were for this season. As in, we went to a cup final last season, we finished fourth, we were a year and a half away, like from the point at which we'd nearly got relegated, and all of a sudden we were back in the Champions League. There was going to have to be some sort of, I don't want to say levelling out, but there was going to have to be some sort of like dip. Me and Mark Corby did a podcast last week where we talked about this. There's a pattern of this. Like, Newcastle United do this quite a lot. Finished third under Keegan, following season finished sixth, then kicked on again to finish second twice. Robson left, Souness absolutely just obliterated the team. Glenn Rhodes had a bounce back the following year, and I think we finished seventh. There's a definite point at which Newcastle United do this. But also, I think we've all been saying all season that average finishing position for teams who come into the Champions League is eighth. If Newcastle finish eighth or ninth, that's okay. Like, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to be ripping up my seat and saying, that's it, I'm never coming back, get how out. Like, what? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, the other thing I would say, pointing back to the comments that were made when we first were taken over, is that what people maybe didn't realise is that actually Amanda Staveley saying this isn't very big. I'd much rather listen to what Yasir Romain thinks we're going to become in 5 years' time. And in that Amazon documentary, he said he wanted us to be number one. And I think that Pip's judgment on where we are is far more concerning than anything Amanda Staveley thinks about where we are, Medrick Goodies thinks about where we are. Because let's be honest, I think their shares now down like 6.5%. Like, they can't sign a major player without Pip saying so. They can't make major wholesale changes without Pip saying so. So we can...
even with the 10%, they never could do any of that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think the situation is that Amanda Staveley saying we're going to be competing for the league in the Champions League in 5 years was exactly what we wanted to hear at the time. And if you work in investment, etc., brilliant, brilliant, because it's getting everybody on board. Everybody wants to hear that. 2.5 years in, when you're potentially going to finish 10th, 9th, it seems like poppycock, seems like completely made up. But if we'd won the League Cup last season, nobody would care where we were finishing this season. Like, genuinely no one would care. And the knock-on impact of where we are is that it's probably going to be a better judge of where are we in January next season. Because if we carry on like this, we have a really poor 2024, then the impact on both the ownership and on the manager will be far bigger than anything that's happened so far this season and even these next 10 games.
Yeah, I think just sort of like, just to go back to what you were saying there, Charlotte, about sort of like, what does this season look like? How do we really assess it? How much of a dip is this? How okay are you with the current squad? I think, forgive me if I'm wrong about this, I think it was actually you, Audie, who a while ago, we were talking about Tonali in the group chat, and I think you mentioned if it hadn't been for the ban, the impact he'd had, we could potentially have, in your view, maybe another 5 or 6 points. I think that's a really reasonable point. You sign players like that, they're worth more wins, they're worth more points to you. It's not just Tonali. Like, if we had those 6 points, like, I think if we had one more win this season, we'd be eighth right now. If we had two more wins this season, we'd be sixth. If we had three more wins, you know, let's say Barnes had been available all season, Joe Linton hadn't had an injury, Isak had stayed fit. Like, what would those results have looked like? And every team gets injuries. We can't sit here and be like, if only everyone had been fit 100% the season. But I just mean, if we'd had them for the bulk of the games, if the injuries had just been piecemeal here and there, we'd have to make a couple of changes for tiredness or whatever. If we'd had what we expect to get out of these players, we'd be sitting fifth or sixth right now. We'd probably be saying, hey, do you know what? Dealing with the extra Champions League fixtures and not being able to spend the kind of money we want, we've actually done really, really well. And I don't think you can sort of dissociate those two facts of, well, we've had this massive fall off and maybe we need to reassess the long-term vision and we need to sort of look at what success looks like and we need to be thinking about how deep we have to cut into this squad before we see real progress, while at the same time sort of acknowledging that it's been an absolute freak show of a season in terms of the circumstances we've had to overcome. And were it not for those, it's not absurd to think we'd be 3, 6, 9 points higher than we currently are. And all of those little increments there put us in a way healthier position. They put us above that average of 8th. And it's been a bit of a weird year for the club. But I also think as a fan base, we've kind of gone a bit mad on occasion. Like, we hate people telling us that we've got unrealistic expectations and that we demand too much. And this season, we've sort of kind of lost our nuts a little bit because it's been so stressful. And every sort of step forward we take, every time we put our foot slightly further forward, we feel like someone appears with a little knife and cuts a little Achilles tendon behind them. We've got to sort of crawl a little on the next one. And I just can't stress enough. It's fine. The squad is not as bad as people think it is. And the season has been bizarre. And we are definitely still on the right path. It's just, and get this one out for your bingo card, like, progress isn't always linear.
So true. So true. And also, pressure is a privilege. I think we'll leave it there for part one. Tick, tick, tick. Full house. We'll leave it there for part one. There is so much more to discuss. There are, I think, for part two, we really need to get into personnel positions. Kyle, I know how much work you've done on this one, so we'll be coming to you to hear a bit more from you on that. Before we break, a little reminder from me that we're on Patreon. We're having lots of these kinds of discussions on our Patreon platform at the moment. Alex, Si, and I did a really great conversation last night about sort of what's going on off the pitch and how's that affecting mood and stuff and sentiment towards the club. So please do consider joining us there. It's between £3 and £8 a month for tons of additional Newcastle United content. And of course, as we get into the transfer window, we'll hopefully have some action there and be able to talk about it, because we love to do that. We'll be back after these messages.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Part two of the show, and we've kind of talked about whether or not we're okay with any changes to the squad. Broadly speaking, we feel that there might need to be, but you can't just be Eddie Howe and dig them all out. Fine. But what areas need improving? So that we'll get into personnel here, I think, and who we have to sell, because how's claiming poverty, right? We're saying we can't do a squad overhaul. We are completely limited by PSR, FFP, whatever, ATM, PIN. We're completely limited by all that. So who do we sell? How do we raise, how do we generate those funds? So those are kind of the pertinent questions. And Kyle, I promised I would, so I'm going to come to you first. What area of the squad do you think is in most need? And I'm thinking about things in terms of sort of, you know, defense, midfield, and forward. So like, what area do you think we need to get out there and strengthen, and how are we going to do it?
I think, like, because in my notes preparing for this, I came up with like five across the squad, but I think I've narrowed it down to three of the most important, where I think this season we could have really done with like a quality player in that position. And hopefully, and like, because obviously you kind of just buy 8 and 9 players over a transfer window, so it's a case of prioritizing where we're at. And personally, I feel like we need a number six. I think that's something that's been kind of there now all season, even when we had Tonali available and Joe Linton and all these players. I think a missing number six has always been in conversation. So for me, I think top of the transfer list would definitely be a number six of some sort. But yeah, I'll open the floor. Really, is there any number sixes that you have in mind?
Well, Adam, do you want to come in? You were frowning as soon as.
Sorry, that wasn't me frowning. I got a concerning message during all of that. I completely forgot my face was visible. When just on specific names for players, I'll improv this. On specific names for players, we're not a club currently in a position where we can just go, who do we like? Let's go and get them. We kind of have to identify, like as Kyle says, profiles of footballers. Like, let's say, for example, you know, we do have several number sixes in the squad or players who can play there. Bruno's certainly not going to get ousted from that position, but certainly having different types of play. Let's say we maybe want somebody who maybe more robust in a tackle. I think we were all sort of looking for that in January, someone who could provide a bit more cover in front of the defence. We sort of have to identify what we want out of that kind of player. Then basically go cap in hand to the market and see who possibly on our price range maybe matches up to 70 or 80% of that. And then see if we can free up the money to go and get them. There's only about 5 or 6 football clubs in the world that just get to go, do you know what we want? We want this kind of player. Let's go out and get the best one currently available. I suspect, as was the case with pretty much every transfer window we've had on these owners, the names that end up coming in will not be people who are currently on anybody's lips or at the forefront of their mind. Certainly, we never had any whiff that we're going to get Isak, even though myself and a lot of other people who played Football Manager absolutely loved him. Tenali, there was never a word breathed about Tenali until literally the day he signed. And I think that's a case of, you know, the club are not looking at individual players right now. They'll be looking at positions and profiles, and they will probably cast their net quite wide in that regard. Let's say we want to go get a left back. I know that would appeal to a lot of people for one reason or another, but the left backs we'll be looking at will be all quite different, and they'll all be quite difficult to get in, more to the point. So for me, I'm not really bothered. The positions don't really bother me too much. I'd love a goal scoring or providing right side of the attacker. I'd love better quality or depth at centre back, but we have to kind of play the market to an extent. And if there's somebody there who improves us in any area and we can afford them, that's who we're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's about who we can afford and who we're going to move on. Now, we have so many. We have a bloated squad. Put that on your bingo card. That one gets used a lot. We have an enormous amount of wages being paid to players that aren't being played. I know you guys, Audie, we were talking before this podcast about players that are still in contract, in nowhere near in contention, and you've got, I think, some sort of ballpark figures on those, right?
Yeah, so just taking the players that are kind of have no real future at Newcastle United, like so I'll take a Jeff Hendrick as a starting point. Signed on a free, alleged wages in the £35,000 to £40,000 a week bracket. Because he was on a free transfer, so he gets a boosted wage when he arrives. We've then also got Ryan Fraser, who arrived again on a free from Bournemouth, probably thinking that Newcastle was a stepping stone to a payday. He's allegedly on roughly £50,000 a week, possibly a little bit more. So you've got this situation where you've got two players there who've literally got no chance of playing for Newcastle United anymore. Fraser and Howe clearly are back to the Bournemouth non-speaking days. And, you know, I'm not sure he's even getting a game every single week for Southampton. So, like, not that I'm massive on the Ryan Fraser radar, but, like, if he's not getting a game for Southampton, he's not going to suddenly come in and improve us. The other thing is that he wanted to play left side of midfield, and we've already got a problem because we've got two players who can play left side of midfield who we think are pretty good. So, and we've also got a striker who some people think should be playing on the left-hand side of the attack. So that's a massive problem because we've got a bit of a logjam there. In terms of what Kyle mentioned before about the sixes, well, again, that creates a problem because probably one of the positions that we're actually most blessed with people who we don't need to replace is midfield. Now, that comes with the caveat that I am one of many people who thinks Bruno Guimarães will probably not be Newcastle player in August 2024.
I agree.
I think that he can talk about 10 games to save our season, about how much he loves it here, about all the noise that came in January. But there's a reason why that release clause is in his contract. And Newcastle United haven't asked for it. And they might have asked for it, but Bruno didn't have to say yes to it. And it's in there for a reason. And I'm interested because Kyle said he had three positions and he's only mentioned the number six. I think realistically that Bruno is the Bruno is the six that houses in the system, and when he replaces him, it'll be another six that plays in exactly the same way as Bruno, I imagine. I don't think we're going to go and get a check to Ote, break it up, pass the ball style, because I just don't think that's the type that you can play in a three in midfield. If I was being honest, and if I was asked to pick three positions that I'd strengthen as a backup number nine, and I'd strengthen on the right-hand side of attack. And those would be the three positions that I would look to go in for. But the other thing about central midfield, and I'm going to throw a cat amongst the pigeons here, is that if Bruno goes and we don't give Joe Linton his contract, new contract, which apparently he's asking for Bruno-esque wages to stay, then we've got a massive situation, because we've then now basically got to go out and buy a whole new first team midfield, or have three new signings, Adam, in Alan Pardew parlance. So yeah, like it's a real situation which the club have kind of backed themselves in the corner. The other thing to remember is that some people have got contracts that run far beyond that. I think Jacob Murphy's contract is still 2027.
Yeah,
there's other people who are under contract till 2026. Like, there's a lot of the players who we've bought since the takeover whose contracts are not as long as some of the Ashley players who were price protected with their long contracts. So that's another thing to consider.
Yeah, I mean, sort of when you lay it out like that, that feels quite depressing.
Always here for the joy, Charlotte. Always here for the joy.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's a lot there that we need to move on that has no incentive to move on, and also has no financial. Yes, it frees it. The wage bill becomes we get a bit more, elasticity there for negotiations with existing players that we really do want to keep, and for potential players coming in. But it's not as if we're going to sell Ryan Fraser and make, 20 million quid or even 50, like, it's just not going to happen. Likewise with most of those players that you're talking about. And so for me, and Kyle, I will come back to you because we've only had one of your positions, but for me, I'm with you, Audie, and I've been very, I'll be very, very happy if he doesn't go, but I don't think Bruno will be here past the summer. And I think that's where our money comes from, because he has played really, really well without injury all season in a squad ravaged by injury. He's shown an incredible amount of discipline when on 9 yellow cards. He's shown that he can pull back. He doesn't play the way he wants to be playing, but he can carry the team in that way and be team spirited and all of that stuff. And he's just pushed his price up. He's an excellent player. We don't win without him. That's concerning, but I think he's going to open up the funds that we're going to need to make any kind of meaningful signings. But Adam, when that came up, you immediately put your hand up like you're in the classroom.
Oh, well, we know the restrictions put on us with the current financial system, it's a whole other podcast, but I do think possibly in the next season or two, that will change, and in a meaningful way for us that does sort of untie our hands slightly. So we're not quite in this exact same position again, but the club have been not exactly sort of broadcasting it, but they've certainly made no attempt to hide the fact that they need to be shrewd operators in the transfer market. And half of that comes from how you acquire players, but the main half of that is how you then move them on and then you reinvest that money. Like, such a song and dance has been made about, the Brighton model and how they sort of worked their way into a position of prominence way beyond their actual spending power, because, lo and behold, we went and got Dan Ashworth. They were very good at identifying talent, developing talent, but had a plan for then how they would then cash in on that talent and reinvest the money. Bruno Guimarães is at this club right now to increase his value and be sold and allow us to go and get two Bruno Guimarães and do the exact same thing with. And that is until all restrictions are lifted from spending in the Premier League, until we're allowed to go have like a 15-year oil money jolly like Abramovich was able to have. That's just simply how we're going to operate. Alexander Isak was bought for 60 million because the club believed he could be worth 150 at some point. Sven Botman was bought for 40 million because the club believed he could be worth 80 million at some point. That's how that works. And though that development and that increase in value is worth absolutely nothing to us as a football club if they're not sold. Like, it does not matter how good they get or how much they improve if we're not able to cash in on that money and take advantage of it. All they'll end up doing is costing us more money because now they're good and they want exorbitant new wages. And it sucks because you don't want to think about football like that. You don't want to think about your players as commodities, and you don't want to think about them as saleable assets. But that's just, unfortunately, the way it's going to go for the foreseeable, until we do fulfill this Amanda Staveley five-year vision of being at the top of football and not being forced to sell these players. So it's just, it was the way where it is. And when we do sell Bruno, I hope we do get every last penny available for him. And I hope that the players we bring in are correctly identified and not waste some money.
Likewise, absolutely. And we would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about some of the youth players that we've brought in and sent out on loan, like Minte is apparently doing amazingly at Feyenoord. He's scoring goals for fun, all of that stuff. Again, it's about value increase. Will he join our squad? Will we sell him on? Like, those are question marks around him at the moment. But Kyle, come on, before we have to end part two, because we've all talked too much, where else are you looking to strengthen?
I think
before you start, Kyle, before you start, sorry. I'm not a grass, but in the group chat before we did this, you identified 14 players that needed to be immediately sold. So I'm interested to hear this.
It's not the next bit though. But in terms of where I'd look to identify the next position with Minte in mind for next season, it would be, I'd be looking for the first team left back next season, because I think this season, obviously, we've been hampered by injuries, with injuries to Matt Target in particular. Dan Byrne had an injury for a couple of months, and ever since he's came back, he's been, I think, targeted a lot, and it's been very difficult to keep goals out when he's been targeted. So I'd probably say first team left back, and as Adam mentioned before, different types of left backs will be looked at. So whether it be a quick fullback or someone who's like Tino, who can do a bit of everything, or someone like Trippier, it depends where the club are at with that. So in terms of names, I'll probably go along the lines of what Adam says before with number six. Is they're probably looking at positions like we're talking about now, but in terms of personnel, a left back knows the league well. I know I've been linked with Kieran Tierney in the past, but he's had his injury problems. I think a left back is something that they're going to have to address definitely in the summer, for sure.
Yeah, much to discuss and positions to strengthen. And I think now we have a real need for a centre-back, given that we're probably not going to have Botman until 2025, really. If we're saying 6 to 9 months and we're already done with March, basically, like that's a long time out. And he's certainly not going to be starting games like right off the bat after 6 to 9 months out. So I think that becomes a priority. And what else is going to happen in the next 10 games that reevaluates all of the priorities? Who else is going to get injured? Time will tell. We'll leave part two there. We're going to talk about, we've touched on it a little bit about all the squad players and stuff, but we're going to talk about that more in part three. Reminder that we're on Patreon. It's between £3 and £8 a month. Please do think about joining us there. If you don't, you have to listen to these adverts. So we'll be back after them. Part three of the show, we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I think it's worth deeper diving into it in relation to squad players, players on loan, and players that are, not to sound brutal, just not good enough for this current team or the team that we want to be. We talked a lot about what should we be, what it should Newcastle be at this stage in their takeover journey. And there definitely are players who even still get game time that maybe aren't good enough. So Eddie Howe can't talk about them because he's got to keep people sweet, but we can and we will. So I think, Audie, we'll just get straight into it. Historically, we've been quite bad at getting cash for players. And I mentioned it there in part two about how, like, yes, we open up our sort of wage bill slightly if we get rid of players like Ryan Fraser, like, I don't even know who, Isaac Hayden, if we did. But we're not likely to get any cash for them, am I right? Just based on past?
Yeah, no. So if I take you back to January of 2023, We sold two players to Nottingham Forest for a combined £25 million. To sweeten the deal, Nottingham Forest allegedly paid Chris Wood £100,000 a week to get him to go to Nottingham Forest. Drink that in, ladies and gentlemen. I thought Bobby Robson pulled a miracle getting £3 million for Silvio Marić in 1999 when we sold him on. But I'll tell you what, Eddie Howe might have pulled rabbits out of hats to get £25 million for those two. I think we're running out of what we would call saleable assets. Alan St. Maximin last summer was our obvious saleable asset. He was someone who we knew we could get money for. There would be a market for him. It wouldn't be in the previously mentioned, if you can get £35 million from him, he can go. And I think we probably got actually fairly close to, I mean, the FA agreed, but fairly close to market value for Alan St. Maximin. Having said that, when was the last player we sold on since that to get like market value for? Because we let Javier Manquillo go in the January transfer window, sort of. He snuck out the back door. We didn't really get much money for him. I don't think we even got anything really for him. And that's because we've got four people who can play at right back. So we don't need four right backs in the squad. We can send him off to be with Rafa at Celta Vigo and get the money even from that. Probably what we're going to have to look at doing is players who are probably good enough to play, but have probably reached a point at which we can't use them anymore. One of those things that we've mentioned in the past is possibly, do those young players who we've brought through, who are saleable assets, do they then need to move on? Having said that, none of them seem to be fit or fully fit. Obviously, Elliot Anderson is now back fit, but hasn't been fit for most of the season. But now Miley and Longstaff are both playing with injuries. You can't really say, oh yeah, we'll flog them in the summer. Miguel Almiron is the one who stands out now. I think in January, I don't think it's a pretense. The players, the way they celebrated at Aston Villa, Murphy's goal where they pointed at Miggy, like there was genuinely an attempt by the club to get Miggy to agree to go to Saudi Arabia in January. I think that'll start up again in the summer because there's another opportunity for £20 million possibly to move him out of the group and on. The problem we've got after that is people have probably peaked in terms of value. Like, what is Callum Wilson's value now? Last season, yeah, I think you could have sold him for quite a lot of money. This season, I'm not sure. I mean, unless you were a team that thought we need someone who'll stay fit a third of the season and still score us one in every two games he plays, then I'm not really sure who's going to be looking for him. He will still probably score six or seven goals in the Premier League if he gets 13, 14 games, but we need someone more reliable than that. And if I'm honest, the biggest people who are going to be, well, we've already mentioned Bruno. Like, obviously, he will carry a significant price tag with him. But the other players, we don't really want to sell. We don't want to sell Botman. We don't want to sell Isak because, you know, they are the players that we would hope would carry us forward. Having said that, they, again, are the ones who are going to be attracting value, as will Anthony Gordon. But I think it's far too early in terms of he's been here a season. The outlay was £40 million. It's far too early to think that someone's going to come in and offer a stellar money deal and he'll move on. One thing I would watch is the goalkeeper situation. Because Kyle says we had three keepers on the bench or whatever, but they soak up quite a lot in terms of earnings. And we can't just keep giving one-year deals out for the bants because we can't move people on. So I'm hoping that Matt Ritchie's £45,000 a week contract doesn't just continually get renewed just because he's great crack on the training ground and kicks corner flags. But we do need to look at those. These are the types of players we need to look to move on because I don't see any of them that are going to get any real cash, and we probably need to wait for their contract to be terminated, just get the wages off the book and be like, right, where can we reinvest that?
Yeah, all very good points. And you sort of eke into the sort of first team players there. And I do think sort of as we start to talk about the players that are bloating the squad, it is a bit of a legacy of the old Newcastle United. And again, I mentioned it, we did this podcast on Patreon about sort of the things that are going on off the pitch that are influencing how we feel about both on the pitch and the club as a whole. And it does kind of feel like these old contracts and these older players are kind of dragging things down. Now, I would also probably move on Murphy. I don't know if that's a particularly harsh view. Like, I think that's maybe a saleable asset because he's not terrible, but I think if we're talking about where we want to be, that's not the player for where we want to be anymore. I really like him. I think he's also inherently memeable and very funny, and he seems to be really, like you say there, Audie, positive influence in the on the training ground and things like that. But again, you know, Audie's just written to me there, like price. I don't actually think you'd get a lot of money for Jacob Murphy. Who's buying him? Like, it's not going to be top of half of the table. Is it going to be a Premier League club? It might be a Championship club, really.
He cost us £12 million.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not as if that's actually going to make a massive dent in our sort of, again, it's wages, but wages are only one small, I think, piece of the puzzle. We need big numbers to come in for these players. I think that the goalkeeper question is interesting. I think Karius has said he wants to leave, that he'd like to go somewhere where he actually gets some game time, fair enough. I don't think Gillespie's going to go anywhere because he sort of ticks that homegrown thing, doesn't he? And we also need to be mindful of that because, of course, PSR is not the only rule we have to follow here. Kyle, what do you reckon? Do you feel that they should have sorted it by now? Like, it, as I said, we're coming into year three. Do you feel like this sort of, again, I'm saying it because it's on the tip of my tongue, this bloated squad of players who are getting massive wages, who are never going to get game time, that we possibly can't move on until their contracts are up? Do you feel that, do you have sympathy for the bind that the club are in, or do you think, like, why the hell haven't you sorted that out?
In a way, I do feel sorry for the club because I think there is a few players, as we mentioned earlier on the podcast, who are on ridiculous wages and they're just not good enough. Like Jeff Hendrick, Isaac Hayden, these players who are just, they're not going to get anywhere near the team, but they're on so much money a week. Like, you could name Hendrick, Hayden and Fraser, and there's like £100,000 a week between them. And like, that could get you a top tier player. And instead, they're just in the, like, not even in the reserves at this point. It's below that. But I think in terms of moving them on, I think it is something that they're gonna have to try and push forward, push ahead with this summer. I know it's going to be difficult because it's all good saying, oh, you'll sell Jeff Hendrick, but who the fuck's going to buy him? He's shit. Like, if we call a spade, he didn't get into the squad for, who was he on loan to? QPR, Redden.
QPR, yeah, both
he didn't get in the QPR squad. Like, who's going to buy Jeff Hendrick and give him the wages he wants? No one. Like, I think Hayden could find a club. I think at the very most, you'd get top level Championship club coming in for him. Fraser, the same. Matt Target, low-end Premier League. Murphy, low-end Premier League. So there is clubs that would be interested in these types of players, but I think the wages they're on is a hurdle as well. So it is going to be difficult, but I think there is a good few of them that need to be moved on in the summer, like Sir Dummett and Richie and Hendrick and Hayden. Like it was mentioned in part two, I named 14 or someone that need to be shown the door in the summer, like, from fringe players to players that are just not good enough for the first team anymore. Like, it's quite a variation of the Ashley regime still stinking out the place, if you will, with, like, rubbish players on stupidly stupid contracts.
I think what we also have to remember is that players don't have to agree to leave. So we saw that in January. I think that there was a bit of hope that Almiron would go to Saudi, and that was all but like done. I think he had a medical at RVI or something like that. Like, and then the player himself said, "No, I just don't want to go there." So you can't necessarily make them do it. Adam, what do you reckon? Sympathy for them with the bind that they're in, or like, for God's sake, fix this?
None. It's literally that's their job. Like, these, it wasn't the sort of they bought this club and it was like, oh, surprise, this is Jeff Hendrick, he's on loads of money. Like, you get into the data room, they do find this out. They will have been told. So the previous regime have gone in. They've had this mad idea that the value of a transfer is actually includes the wages. So if they go and get some nobody on a free, they'll put them on £100,000 a week. So, like, they did know all this when they came in. And part of the job was, okay, well, if we want to, you know, the PSR rules weren't revealed in a Kinder egg for them. Like, they knew that before they got in. Like, all the contract situation was publicly available. This was, to them, part of the appeal. Like, there is so much work to do and build it from the ground up. And it's their job to then go and do that in an organized manner. And they haven't really, like, massively effectively. I hate the term not good enough. And it's not because it's not accurate. Because if we do want to be a club at a certain level, there's a lot of players currently in the squad that simply will not reliably or consistently get us there. But I think it's just, I've heard those words said about so many players at this club that people have ended up looking stupid for saying it against. Like, when the new owners came in, the amount of players in that squad that were deemed, well, they're not good enough if we want to go and build. And then Fabian Scher developed under Eddie Howe, became sensational. Jacob Murphy played a huge part last year in the squad, was fantastic. Think about that Tottenham game. That was not the same player we'd seen on the books before. Almiron was a must-have in Fantasy League because he scored a goal every single time he got on a football pitch. Sean Longstaff was on his way out of the Championship or to Everton or something, ended up becoming a vital part of that squad in the second half of last season. We missed him massively in the first half of this season as well. It's the roles and responsibilities being dumped on him with injuries have really pushed past what he's capable of doing. There's never really any such thing as someone being out and out not good enough. It's just as a consistent ball across the sides, you need levels and you need, you know, you need the average of the group to be at a certain level. There's always good pros who are going to be worth something regardless of what their current ability is. But as is quite rightly pointed out, Jeff Hendrick's not one of them. And Isaac Hayden's probably not one of them. And nobody in their right mind is going to give us £3 or 4 million to get them off the books. But to answer your original question, I've gone off on a tangent. To answer your original question, no, I haven't got any sympathy. Because if I'm Isaac Hayden and I've signed for a football club, right, and I've worked my arse off there and I've put in a number, I've given some of my best years to that. I've played in the Championship. I've got them in the Premier League. I've been consistent in the Premier League. I've been rewarded for my good form with a new contract. And I find myself surplus to requirements because, lo and behold, they've been bought out by the biggest private investment fund in the world. And they go, oh, would you mind just, it's this legal document you signed and we were committed to, would you mind just tearing that up and earning a quarter of that for the next 3 years instead? I'm going to politely say, no, I'm not going to be looking to save the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia a few thousand pounds a month. I don't think that's my problem, unfortunately. And that is, they're well within their rights to do that. And it's the club that's got to find a way to deal with it.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I also err on the side of little sympathy. This is, I keep talking about this pod we did about off the pitch and I just think it all ties in, right? It's like we are nearly 3 years in. The infrastructure, the appropriate personnel, the appropriate way of dealing with certain things should be in place by now. It feels like maybe I'm being unfair and actually running a football club is hard. I don't know, could be, but
they're making it look like it is.
But I do just sort of feel like a lot of these questions are questions that the club should have answers for, and maybe they do have answers for them, and we're going to see those answers in the summer. But what we've kind of talked about here is there is a lot that needs to change on a squad level for us to be able to go forward and compete, and it seems like a big ask at the moment. So time will tell. The window opens at the end of May and we'll see what happens, if anything. Who was I talking? I was talking to somebody recently who said that they think, maybe it was on a podcast, that's all I do, that we'll be quite, we'll make a statement early on in the window, and maybe we will, maybe we won't, maybe we'll leave it till midway through, pretend we don't know who Harvey Barnes is and then have him fly to Philadelphia. Anything could happen.
It's Barbie Harnes.
We will leave it there, I think, because we just said the words Barbie Harnes. Thank you, Adam, Stephen, and Kyle for joining me this evening. One more reminder, we're on Patreon. Please do consider joining us there. We'll be doing all of the lead up to West Ham as well as the post-West Ham content as well. Hopefully our first win of 10 for the rest of the season. Thank you so much for joining me. Take care.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the Mags £4 pint, available on all draft beers for all NUFC home and televised games, 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. Over 18s only, Visit begamblerware.org, be drinkaware for details and T's and C's. Visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.